Hello, I'm Nigel Reed, and welcome to Cricket Central. On this edition, the best of the best. The Champions League T20 is ready to roll with only the world's elite making the cut. Who are the real contenders? Who are there to make up the numbers? And what happens when patriotism trumps a fat paycheck? All that and more on today's Cricket Central. With me to dissect, discuss and debate the tournament ahead and the storylines surrounding it are two men whose combined cricketing knowledge and passion for the game is virtually limitless. Let me introduce you to cricket writer and broadcaster Faraz Sarwat and alongside him, Josh McLean, currently head coach at Toronto Cricket Club. Gentlemen, welcome. Here we go again. It's fast, it's furious, there's not much time for finesse in this game. And I'm going to start with you, Josh. Welcome to the show, welcome to the studio. The reason I'm going to start with you is because you are, of course, from Australia, and the Sydney Sixers are the current champions of the Champions League T20, but they're not here this time.
That's right, Nigel. Yeah, we won't see the famous Sixers, they're calling themselves now. We won't see them this year after their great success as the Sixers and before that as New South Wales. This time we'll see the Brisbane Heat and the Perth Scorchers, who were both the form teams of last year's T20 competition in Australia.
So the Champions League T20 for us has been on the books since 2009. Theoretically, it brings together the best T20 teams from all around the world. This is year five, but I wonder whether this tournament has captured the imagination and is getting the attention that it would like to have. Does it have that credibility that any professional league needs?
I think it's getting there, and the more teams that get to play in the tournament, I think the more it widens the appeal for the tournament. A team like Faisalabad, which is going to make its first appearance in the tournament, certainly that's going to open up a whole new market for the tournament. You have other teams playing for the first time, so that certainly expands it. If your team is in there, then you know it becomes something to aspire to for teams playing in domestic leagues. So yeah, I think so. Now, one of the elements here is that there are always a number of IPL teams and they have their own following. So you could say that they start out of the gate with a following there for the tournament. And of course, new fans come along when their team breaks through into the tournament.
10 teams is what we will end up with. There is a qualifying stage as well. Perhaps it's significant to say that the tournament as a whole is owned jointly by the BCCI, the Cricket Control Board in India. I believe they own 50%. Then the other stakeholders essentially are Cricket South Africa, Cricket Australia. I suppose, Josh, it's no surprise that the majority of the teams taking part and pre-qualified come from those domestic T20 leagues.
Particularly the IPL, which we know is probably the premier T20 competition in the world, and we see four very strong teams as part of that. And also, the KFC Big Bash in Australia is known as one of the real premier T20 competitions now around the world, and we see two teams from there as well.
How does the Big Bash League compare with IPL? Because I think fans in North America over the last two or three years have become familiar, as Faraz suggests, with IPL. We understand, of course, that there is the T20 League in Australia. We don't see so much of it, but is it a league that has engendered the interest and the fanaticism, perhaps, that the IPL has done?
5 years ago, you would have laughed if I said this, but it has become the flagship of Australia's cricket summer. And we see a lot of the same players playing in the IPL coming and playing in Australia in the same tournaments. The paychecks aren't quite as big, but the standard is still there. As we know, lots of fantastic facilities in Australia, and a lot of these players enjoy the opportunity to play at the MCG or the SCG or the Adelaide Oval and a very, very good standard of cricket. And that's something that's really taken off the last couple of years in Australia.
So we have three Indian teams pre-qualified, two Australian teams pre-qualified, also from South Africa, one Caribbean team and two qualifiers, Trinidad and Tobago as the Caribbean representative. And you would expect them to give as good as they get for most teams, although it is significant, and we're going to talk about this in depth in a little while, that a number of their star players, the Trinidadians, are actually playing for their IPL teams. So there's a bit of an awkward crossover here, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Now, you've rightly identified the Trinidad and Tobago team as one to look out for. And part of the reason is that they are very experienced playing in this format of cricket. They're a homogenous side. They know each other well. You know, they play together constantly. A number of these players are West Indian players, so they've played for the West Indies, a lot of depth and experience in that side. And the fact that the players know each other and there's cohesion in the side means that they necessarily necessarily have a leg up on some teams which are kind of cobbled together, one might think.
Yeah, so as you say, it's actually a native team which has all grown up together and has that identity from childhood, never mind whether or not you're a professional cricketer.
In the past, we've actually seen that a TNT side that did well captured the imagination of the Caribbean, and in fact, the success of one of these teams in an earlier tournament had some people in the West Indies talking about, well, should Trinidad just go out and play international cricket on its own and break away from the West Indies? And that kind of talk has started to happen. So this is a country, right? The West Indies is a collection of countries, but this is actually a country in itself. And that certainly means, I would think, a heightened level of commitment and passion that you might see from a Trinidadian side as opposed to one that's cobbled together of professional, one might say, mercenaries.
Well, that's somewhat the lie of the land as far as T20 is concerned. And Josh, this year we've seen the first Caribbean T20 league come together as well. So the gospel is spreading worldwide as far as this form of the game is concerned.
Yeah, it's such a fast-growing format, and why not? It's so exciting and so fast, and games change within an over or two overs. You know, a couple of wickets swings momentum, and three or four sixes in a row swings momentum back in the favour of the batting side, and that's why the fans love it so much.
Now, I'm going to ask you to do a sales job on your co-commentator here, because our regular listeners know that Faraz is a little bit of a traditionalist on some subjects, including this. He's not a huge fan of T20. He understands the appeal and the excitement, but just talk to him about why a game that is played in 3 hours is what it's really all about.
Absolutely, yeah. There is absolutely room for two formats of the game at the moment. I think the most irrelevant format at the moment is 50 over cricket. I think it's somewhere in the middle. You've got your test traditionalists who love their test cricket, and I'm one of those, and the T20 fans who get out of their seat and get excited by the action and the excitement of 3 hours of cricket. I think 50 over cricket's the one in the middle, Faraz. What do you think?
Well, it is caught in the middle, and sometimes the best things are in the middle. You have extremes on either side, and the middle is where the truth lies. So, 50 over cricket, I think, has given a lot to the sport. I mean, for one thing, it gave us our World Cup. It's the format that actually expanded cricket around the world. And to me, it provides the opportunity for batsmen to be batsmen, bowlers to be bowlers. I remember when T20 cricket started, somebody like Shoaib Akhtar said, it takes me four overs just to kind of get warmed up, you know, and it's all over in a 20 over match. Now, of course, things have moved on from then.
But Faraz, that's what test cricket's for.
Yeah. No, I don't doubt that. But I think that one day cricket, for me, has its own appeal. I mean, 10 overs, you get to see the best bowlers. A batsman has an opportunity to play themselves in, build an innings, you know, score 100, all of that kind of stuff.
But it's interesting to watch the evolution of T20, because now when you go back and watch a 50 over game, which used to be quick cricket, it almost looks as though it's being played in slow motion.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think eventually it will fade because I think the gap between 2020 cricket and test cricket is too wide. Mm. You can have a good test cricketer who may be an average T20 cricketer, but the best T20 cricketer may not be able to play test cricket. And that gap is too huge. And one day cricket, I think, kind of bridges that a little bit.
Faraz, let's not forget one thing. It's all about the money. It's about the paychecks. Yeah. And 2020 at the moment is bringing in the fans, the players getting paid the big bucks. It looks like that's where we're heading.
But interestingly, you talk about the traditionalist and the vast gap between the two forms of the game. And yet we've seen as recently as this year's IPL with a player like Rahul Dravid, who's, you know, a dinosaur by T20 standards, but he's managed to adapt his game and do very nicely at it.
Yeah, but the saying, I think, goes that the best test cricketer is going to be able to play any format of the game. Ah. And it doesn't necessarily go the other way, where somebody who can smash three sixes and that's all they can do, and they'll be out. So if they scored 18 runs off three balls, that's a great day of T20 cricket for that player. That's not a great day of test cricket.
Fair comment?
It is, but I think in the last couple of years, we've even seen a shift from T20 excitement into test cricket. The players like Chris Gayle, the players like David Warner, these guys are scoring fast centuries in test match cricket, and I think that's stemming from their T20 talents. What do you think, Faraz? Am I on the right line with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's also come into one-day cricket, where once one-day cricket became, you know, the norm and it was played all the time in five-match series and this and that, you actually started to see more results in test cricket. You know, there used to be more draws in test cricket, and draws have almost become an anomaly, you know, and draws, in fact, have become exciting because it means that the game is really on the line and somebody's trying to save it. But in the past, you used to have, you know, two inning or three inning matches, and that would be it.
The Champions League T20 is upon us. You can catch all the action on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online, presented by CIBC. We will concentrate on the teams and the personalities when we come back.
Now's your chance to witness one of the most exciting leagues in sports. See some of the greatest players in cricket take center stage. Experience the intensity of Indian Premier League. Just subscribe now to Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online. See it live and in HD. Who will win the battle for Pepsi IPL 2013 supremacy? Visit sportsnet.ca/world for details on how to subscribe. Presented by CIBC.
Welcome back to Cricket Central. I'm Nigel Reid, alongside Faraz Sarwat and Josh McLean. We're looking ahead to the 2013 edition of the Champions League 20, about to get underway in several cities across India, though not Hyderabad, which was originally on the list of venues but has been withdrawn through security reasons. Lots of storylines for us coming into this tournament, not just about the teams themselves and which may be contenders and which are essentially also runs, but also several stories of players who have IPL contracts who you might think would play for their native teams, their countries or their teams, but indeed have had difficult decisions to make. And there's been a lot of publicity surrounding Kumar Sangakkara about whether he would play for his IPL franchise or for the Sri Lankan qualifying team that is in the tournament. He's made a decision, but it hasn't been necessarily made easy for him.
No, it hasn't been made easy for him, and in fact one might say that his arm was twisted a little bit. Some could even call it emotional blackmail at some level. I mean, the issue essentially is this, that when you have professional cricket players who are playing all over the world, they're not just limited to playing for their city teams. They're playing in the IPL, they're playing in other leagues, and their teams end up qualifying, or some of their teams end up qualifying, and you have a choice to make. Where do you go? Now, as Josh alluded to, the IPL is the money league, and those are the teams that, you know, generate the most money, the biggest payout, the most likelihood of walking away winning the tournament, and, you know, the resulting riches that come. And then on the other hand, you have your native team, which is, you know, in a qualifying stage of this tournament. No guarantee that you're going to make it out. And the debate becomes one of, okay, your professional pride in wanting to win a tournament and have a paycheck, or being loyal to your local team and the emotions of the fans in your country and all the rest of it. So they're saying that Sangakkara stands to lose about $140,000 by deciding to play for his Sri Lankan team rather than his IPL team. But the fact that the board kind of, you know, was talking about it publicly meant that Sangakkara really had no choice other than to go with his native Sri Lankan team. Because again, this is a star player. He's an icon in his country. He's done a lot for his country. He's been a captain. He's scored oodles and oodles of runs. He's been the number one ranked batsman in the world at periods of time. He's a gentleman cricketer. And if he had made any other choice, he could stand to lose his reputation in his own country. So it's kind of unfair, but at this point, I think he's probably made the only choice he could have made.
Is this something, Josh, that we're going to see as this competition evolves? Because Sangakkara is not the only player who is contracted to an IPL team who has had to kind of make this choice here. Or in some of these cases, some of the Australians, some of the Trinidadians haven't had that opportunity to make that choice, which perhaps they could. This is one of those strange kind of grey areas which the organisers of this tournament perhaps need to clear up in coming editions.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see which direction these players go. We see two players in the Australian setup at the moment in the same position. Mike Hussey, of course, a huge name in cricket worldwide, and in particular 2020, has played a lot of cricket with the Chennai Super Kings, but also plays with his native state, Western Australia, for the Perth Scorchers. He's chosen the Super Kings, I assume, because the pay packet is probably a little bit bigger. Shane Watson, also in the same boat. He won't be playing for his native Brisbane Heat. So it's not just Kumar Sangakkara in that boat.
So as an Australian, how do you read these decisions? Is it all about the money? Because, I mean, these are talented, high-profile sportsmen. We are assuming that they're not worrying about paying the next hydro bill. So presumably they've got money in the bank. Are you somewhat surprised by the fact that these players have apparently decided to stay with their IPL franchises? Or, again, is there some arm-tugging, you know, going on behind the scenes?
Well, it's like tug of war. They're being pulled in different directions.
Yeah.
But I think they should be playing for their native side. Both of these guys have had so much done for their careers in their home states, Hussey, Western Australia, and Shane Watson in Queensland, I think they should be repaying that faith. And I don't think it's a good thing for cricket worldwide if the decisions are being made based on money rather than loyalty.
The argument against that, though, of course, for us, is that with their IPL teams, they were effective performers, and perhaps if they hadn't been part of their IPL teams, their IPL teams wouldn't have qualified for the Champions League T20 anyway.
Well, that is true. And if you look at a team like Sunrisers Hyderabad, Sangakkara was their captain, right? And their captain isn't leading them. In fact, he's playing for his Sri Lankan side where he's not the captain. So it's an interesting dynamic. But I think with these IPL teams, they can really afford to not have the Husseys and, you know, the Watsons and everyone else, because they've got a roster full of international players that they can have.
What about the fans? Because the tournament ultimately will succeed or fail on the number of viewers that it has attracted around the world. Josh, you said you hate the fact that the Australians are playing for their IPL teams as opposed to their native teams. Do you think it would play out better in Australia if those high profile players were playing for Australian teams?
Yeah, no doubt. I think the Brisbane Heat fans would love to turn on the TV and see Shane Watson in action. He's one of their favourite players. He's one of their favourite sons. And I think that will certainly have an impact on how many people back home are getting up early and tuning into the tournament.
Yeah, so getting engaged and actually supporting your hometown team, which is so much of what professional sport is really all about.
Yeah, so spare a thought for Kumar Sangakkara, who actually has to have his Sri Lankan team play his IPL team in a qualifier.
One point to make, Nigel, is that this is the world of T20 cricket. Some of these players, in fact, don't just play for two teams. They play for four or five teams at the moment, and that's the way we're heading.
Very interesting, and something, obviously, as you say, that the organisers will have to address as the tournament evolves. Another storyline that I want you to talk about, Faraz, is the fact that there is a Pakistani franchise in Faisalabad that will take part in this tournament, albeit to start within the qualifiers, but that was by no means certain up until very recently.
Well, that's right. There was all kinds of issues about whether the team would be granted visas to go to India, and quite shameful, actually, that on the eve of the tournament, this wasn't resolved back and forth. At one point, the visas were denied.
Is this any sort of surprise that this sort of shenanigans was going on as close to the tournament, bearing in mind that India is staging the tournament?
It's a little bit of a surprise to me. It was always on the cards, but you kind of feel or hope that professionalism reigns supreme and these kinds of games aren't played. But, you know, it's affecting for players. One day they're practicing, and the other next day they find out that no, go home. You're not going to the tournament that you aspired to play, and you know you won your domestic title knowing that you would go to this tournament.
This is more to do, surely, with political one-upmanship than it is to do with anything like a cricket tournament, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because, you know, people say, well, you know, relations between the two countries are poor, and that's the effect of it. But on the other hand, there are all kinds of other cultural exchanges that continue to go on. Pakistani artists, singers, whatever, they're able to go to India, perform, whatever. So because cricket is more high profile, people play games with it. In the end, it was always going to happen. I thought that the visas would be granted, but I thought it was kind of shameful that it happens at the last minute. Certainly that has an impact on a team's preparation, their morale, their mental strength when they go in, because they're distracted. And of course they have an uphill battle because they're in a qualifying stage.
Yeah, so talk about from a playing and a coaching and a preparation perspective. I mean, as you say, these guys don't know whether they're going. They are going. We're not sure. How can you be mentally focused on the job ahead?
Yeah, this is the last thing they would have wanted heading into a major tournament of this stature. These guys would have been not sure whether to go to the Nets or whether to go and see the missus. Are we going to the tournament? Should I settle in and have a pre-season and get ready for next summer? It can't be good for your preparation.
Okay, we will see what we'll see as far as the Faisalabad franchise is concerned. Sachin Tendulkar, for many years and for many people, and certainly for the Indians, the world's greatest cricketer. We may see him almost certainly for the last time for us in this form of the game. He's had that surgery on his hand which forced him to miss the Mumbai Indians grand finale in the IPL, but he'll be back, we're told, in time for this tournament.
Yeah, so they say any team with Sachin Tendulkar in it is a strong team. The Mumbai Indians were able to do quite well without him, and their captain Ricky Ponting, who's been dumped for this tournament, but
not happy.
Certainly having Tendulkar in the side, even if he's not playing and even if he's not at 100%, just the fact that he's in that dressing room and is able to provide guidance to a team and just the aura around around Tendulkar. Certainly, I mean, Tendulkar isn't one to be a passenger. He will want his team to win this tournament, and I think that's part of the reason why he's there, that he can add one more ring on his finger.
We all remember that experiment that went horribly wrong with his acquisition to Mumbai. I mean, is anything else in the fallout from the latest IPL edition going forward, raised its ugly head as far as Ponting's performance or lack of performance or lack of chemistry with Tendulkar surfaced back in Oz?
Not really. I think a lot of the issues around Ricky Ponting is the fact that he has stepped away from the international scene for some time now, and he's certainly not putting in the work that he used to. So we were all under the impression that Ricky Ponting wasn't overly excited to be a part of it anyway. However, some of the reports, of course, are contrary to that.
We may never know until he writes his autobiography, I suppose. Talking of legends of the game, one other point, boys. I want to talk about Brian Lara, who is not officially part of the T&T team, but he's going as a kind of a mentor, as a sort of a part-time assistant, and presumably the GM up in the dressing room. And having been fortunate to be down in T&T earlier in the year, I mean, there is no question that on that particular island, he's almost revered as a god. So if you've got him in and around the dressing room, that can't do them any harm, can it, for us?
Well, it didn't quite help them when he was a player. West Indies didn't win a lot of games with Brian Lara on the side.
He scored lots of runs, though.
He scored lots of runs. He's a magnificent player. And I think they may be hoping for the Tendulkar effect with him. Having Brian Lara there certainly can be an inspiration. You don't want to let him down. If you've got him in the dressing room, you're going to want to perform to the best of your abilities. But he doesn't really have an official role on the side. It's not like he is officially a batting coach or something like that. So,
and should he? I mean, or is it, should he just be around the team in a kind of, G-up, cheerleader sort of role?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're not talking about a bunch of kids here.
But there is only one Brian Lara.
Yes, that is true. There's a Darren Bravo, though, who kind of looks like him. But anyway, that's another discussion.
looks like him, doesn't quite play like him.
Doesn't play like him, but certainly looks like him.
The stats are a little different.
But I think, the issue is this, that if Brian Lara is there, what is really his role? Is it when he feels like it, he's going to offer some tips? Is it more motivational and conversational, or is he actually in the nets helping certain players? I don't know. They've left it kind of loose, and maybe that's the way it works for the TNT team, just to have him around. It's more of a vibe. It's more of a chemistry thing, and not necessarily anything formal or structured.
Okay, so Trinidad and Tobago, who have finished runners-up in this tournament, will be looking to repeat that sort of success this time round. Before we go, boys, Mumbai Indians, Chennai Super Kings, the South African teams. You've talked about the two Australian teams as well. Josh, pick me one or two who are pretty nailed on to go a long way into this tournament.
My tip is the Mumbai Indians. Their lineup is just so strong. They've got every base covered, and they've got such an incredible array of international stars. I think they've just got too much experience. But don't count out the Perth Scorchers. These guys have got a couple of big game players in there, and I think they might just step up to the plate as well.
So the Scorchers, the Indians, do you all offer an alternative?
Chennai Super Kings. I'm not a big fan of the Chennai Super Kings, but I think they play really well together in this format of the game. You can never discount them. TNT, just because of what we talked about earlier, the cohesion in the side and the fact that they are experienced at this level. They're motivated as a country playing in this tournament, which is for clubs. So that, I think, adds a dimension to it. And even though I don't expect the Faisalabad Wolves to do well, I'm very interested to see how they do. They only have two internationals in the side in Misbah Ul Haq and Syed Ajmal. The rest of the team is just local players from the city of Faisalabad. So it would be interesting to see how they do on the big stage.
Fascinating conversation. Thanks very much to Faraz Sarwat and Josh McLean. Don't forget, you can catch all the action from the Champions League T20 on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online, presented by CIBC. Cricket Central is a Titan GSG production. Executive producer Rathan Morthy. The editor is Jeff Eaton, and I'm Nigel Reed. Until next time, thanks for listening.